Hi, I'm Austin, and this is Hort-Bajir Chronicles. Senilian, you enter into this mist, and as you drop down even further, you can see that there's cliffs lining the walls. The ground is covered with mostly rock and dirt. There are some patches of grass. There's stalagmites shooting up out of the ground. There are some trees that are along the walls growing out of the cliff sides. And you see this mist flowing all around you as you shoot through. You hear strange noises echoing throughout this crevice, hisses, distant growls, low screeches, louder than you've heard, than you could hear before as you were up there, more sounds even. This place feels uninviting. Roll me a perception check as you shoot through.
So 16.
So the mist of like obscures your vision, and it's hard to see around you, but you do hear noises from the cliff sides, some scattering, moving fast, and yeah, as you fly past, you'll every now and then hear that to the sides.
When I hear that, can I like kind of skirt over that way to see if I can see anything, but still like not getting too close?
Yeah, you bank over towards that cliffside, climb a little bit, and you see a figure go into like just the tail end of it, shoot into like an opening in the side of the cliff face. It looks like a dugout hole.
And what does the tail look like?
Short and stubby.
Okay. He'll keep flying kind of around. If there's like stalagmites, I'm imagining it like they're coming up very high and like he's like weaving in and out of them. Okay. So yeah, I think he'll just keep doing that right up to the 5 minute mark. And then like right before that 5 minute mark, turn around and like trace back the way that he had come.
You do notice after, like, towards the end of this 5 minutes, the ground is constantly, like, because you get a little bit lower and you can see the ground, but it is constantly sloping downward. So it's going even deeper than when you first came in. Give me another perception check as you, like, hit and then start to move up.
19.
You don't see it, but you hear a big kind of breathing, like heavy breaths that sound like they're coming from something that's large. But that would have been deeper if you would have kept going. You that's where you hear that coming from.
Does it sound like, I know it's heavy breathing, but are we talking about like wet heavy breathing or like just heavy breathing?
Tell me what the difference is. I know, like, what are you trying to figure out about?
No, I think you'd be better off showing me the difference, like letting me hear the difference between wet, heavy breathing and heavy
Well, like breathing. One's going to sound more amphibious, right, than the other one? Because like one's just going to be like this. And the other one's going to be like. You asked for it, Tim.
Give me a nature check.
Sure.
Give me a moist check.
I hate that.
What about a survival check? How would you like that?
I'll give survival.
Okay. I don't know. Shit.
Yeah, it's you just hear that sound and you know it's breathing, but that's kind of all you can tell. I guess that it sounds like normal breathing, not wet. Cool. But you can't get much more than that. As you move away from that and back towards Alira and each, you hear a staticky pop pop sound coming from lower to the ground towards the side of the cliff.
I think you would try to drop down and check that out.
Yeah, you go to where you kind of heard this sound and you can get there. It's close to the ground, so if you keep going, you'll come out of the mist, and you'll see that the lower part, there's no mist there. you get down there and you see, you hear behind the rock that the sound where is coming from behind that. Do you land?
Not, he's not going to land. He's just going to skim.
Kind of skimming around the rock, you can hear clearly this sound, and it keeps repeating. It's like, and it's coming from behind the rock, but you can't get back there to see because, like, the way the rock's positioned, it's you can't see anything.
All right, he'll just do like a circle and then keep flying. He'll probably stay kind of under the mist for just a little bit before like going back up.
You want to roll another perception check as you like look around under the mist?
Yeah, fuck it. Why not? As my Hork-Bajir friends would say, fuck it. 11.
Oh, an 11. Well, with hearing.
Yeah, an 11.
With hearing.
Yeah. No. Yeah, Austin. Hey, Austin, I get advantage on these rolls. Did you know that?
You don't see anything.
I'm just saying I get advantage on these
rolls. But you don't see anything. What do you do?
Keep observing, but moving on and then going up back towards the bridge tree.
Pretty uneventful. As you move back, get back into the mist, climb up out of it, you can see that you've traveled pretty far in that few minutes as you kind of rise above the mist. But you also see heading towards the other end of the tree bridge, Kefa, y'all, and Yunos, and another Hork-Bajir with a green-leafed mane shooting off it, but wearing that on his head.
Okay, I think seeing that, he would probably try to, like, if he could, like, shoot ahead to get to where Alira and Ich are, and land and try to demorph quickly.
Yeah, you got enough time to do that.
Great.
So they are approaching. Anything else you all want to do before they get there?
I think Snillian will just be giving them the quick download of everything that he saw down below, you know, talking about, like, the popping noises and the creature towards the end that was breathing heavily and how it kept sloping downwards. Like, he's just giving them an information download of all of that.
And, yeah, eventually, Kefa, y'all, you all will rejoin with the rest of the group on this tree bridge. As you approach, first he'll see the Andalites. He'll look at him and say, I see what mean.
Yeah, new friends, strange.
Yeah, blue, the blue ones.
Yeah, not bad blue. These new friends, good blue.
Good blue. He looks at the Andalites and then notices Bronk. Bad?
Nope, him good too.
Good. All good.
All good.
Bronk good. Bronk maybe will lick you. A lot.
Bronk eat Hork-Bajir?
No.
Or just...
No, best. Not... Is affection, I think.
Bronk love.
Oh, hello. I, Chief Brower, and I love too. But maybe Bronk love me. Come, Bronk.
Ich is gonna look at Bronk and be like, go friend.
Yes, come friend Bronk. Nice to meet you. And Bronk kind of like limps over and then starts to go a little bit faster towards him and jumps up and just collides with the chieftain, and he drops back to his back, and you see him start to roll towards the edge, both of them. Oh, ha, 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 ha. It's funny, and then they roll off.
Kefa's gonna grab y'all and run that way.
I'm assuming, like, isn't that kind of like normal play behavior for the Hork-Bajir? Like, we play in trees.
It is. Okay. And you, as you all get over there, you see that the chieftain is hanging from a branch by his legs like he was earlier. And he's like holding Bronk and just like holding him close and scritching on him.
Y'all is going to look at Sinilian and be like, you tell Chief about strangers.
The Yerks?
Yes. You make him understand. Y'all has limited ability to speak.
Sinilian will, like, sort of stand up straight like he would be reporting like to an important Andalite then, but the entire time you're there, his tailblade is held away from you. And should you move towards him, he will be moving his tailblade away from where you are moving. Extremely aware of that. But yeah, he'll kind of stand up straight and be like, the Yerks are a species that look like a small, no-limbed, sort of wet blob kind of a thing. But they are very dangerous. They are not to be underestimated. They were given transport off of their homeworld by a misguided kindness, and they can take over the body of species that are not them by crawling into their ear and wrapping themselves around the brain. They have some weaknesses. They need to feed every 3 days. They need to survive off of Candrona rays. They need pools to go into, but their strengths are that once they take over a being, they can read all of their thoughts and they can imitate them flawlessly. And then he'll kind of look to Alira like, did I do good?
And then y'all will look at the chief and be like, there, now you understand.
The chief will like look to y'all when he says that, and as he's like hanging down off this branch, he'll like look at you and then look back to Senilian. Senilian, give me a charisma check.
Why on earth? This might not be so bad, I mean. Okay, thank God. It's not that bad. I immediately am like, oh God, because Savannah. So I'm like, I can't do charisma.
He looks at you kind of blank for a second and he says, you say a lot of words. Never hear before. No understand. But sound bad. And he looks to Kepha. Kepha, y'all, save Yunos. And then he'll look back to Senilian and he'll say, you trust? And he'll point to Senilian.
New friend.
Together.
All of you guys can give me insight checks on him. Kepha, you are kind of focused on all of the information that Senilian has given and like wondering if that will maybe be too much for the chieftain to understand, and so you don't catch it. You don't catch this. Senilian, he kind of like looks you up and down, but you can't get like a read on what that is. When an Andalite sizes somebody up, that's something that they do, but that might not be the same for the Hort-Bajir.
I think Senilian's still focused on looking at Alira like, did I do good? Please help.
She's going to smack you in the flank with her tailblade gently and give you an Andalite smile.
Big relief.
Each and y'all each notice that Chief Brower seems to be on the fence. It looks like he's more leaning towards helping. It looks like he needs like a little bit of a push. Alira, you see that as well. And he also cares a lot about his daughter. You can kind of tell that by how he is just ecstatic that they helped him and willing to do anything for the people that did help his daughter. You think it might not be too hard to convince him, using him being the chieftain, him being the lead, and over everybody, might be able to sway him if it's for like the better of the Hort-Bajir. But he still doesn't seem completely convinced as he's kind of mulling this over in his head.
If I may, Chief, I know this is a lot of information and it's a lot of confusion and everything, but let me boil it down to what it really is. Your planet is in danger. Your people are in danger. If the Yerks take over, they will enslave every last Hort-Bajir. They will enslave you. They will enslave your daughter and your people. And you will not be free to move your own limbs, to swing in your trees. They will control you, and they will ruin everything that you've built here.
Yeah, they bad.
Fuck yeah, new friends.
Kepha's gonna laugh at that a little, but she's gonna get somber, and she's going to turn to the chieftain and say, Kepha not know if dad okay? Kepha know almost everyone gone. but Hork-Bajir together. Strong.
I'll leave this up to Jenna and Casey. Either one of you can roll the persuasion and give the other advantage, but only one of you can make the roll.
That is so much pressure.
What's your... I'm not.
yeah, I have a one. Oh, no.
You got this.
I got this.
Yes.
We'll see. All right. Thank goodness for that advantage.
He looks to y'all, looks back to Lyra, looks to Kefa, you know, does the rounds. And then he looks to the trees and the branches that hang over. And he is like kind of swaying back and forth as he's still hanging down on this branch. You see, he kind of like starts to nod and lifts himself up and pulls himself back up onto the tree branch that you all are on. And he says,
I help. We help. We swing free. What do?
Kefa's going to turn back to y'all and say, y'all teach to fight.
Y'all beat grins.
This village is a great, it's a forest all around. Like I said, this plateau sits higher than the other plateau that the bridge, the tree bridge, lays across. As y'all is teaching different Hork-Bajir, you know, to start fighting, what are the rest of you doing?
I think Sinilian would jump in with y'all and help teach them, like teach when he could, but like also just offer as like a sparring partner or, you know, whatever he can do.
You know that like y'all is all in for the help with the Andalite and stuff and getting to learn more from the Andalite too. So
Alara and Sinilian roll intelligence checks.
Why are you so rude to me tonight, Austin?
Both of you, the Andalites, kind of put together in your all's heads doing the math and how long it took you guys to traverse the planet and to get here, and based on how many Ged and Hork-Bajir that you've seen in the group behind you, if they traveled the same pace that they were traveling when you all were near them, they're probably about a day to a day and a half behind you. That's your time frame. And let's do a montage of you guys getting ready, you know, preparing or teaching these Hork-Bajir and coming up with your plan. Sinilian and y'all, as you all are training, I don't know, describe some cool stuff.
Do you got stuff?
No.
Okay. Well, I think for the first part of it, Sinilian would be watching what y'all was showing them to learn. Like, if there's one thing I think he would be able to assess relatively quickly, it would be watching them train with the blades and then being able to kind of like input what maneuvers he knows that they would be capable of doing with the blades that they have. So if it's something like y'all is teaching them how to like just like cut downwards at something, he could show them a way to like, you know, oh well, if you took your blade and you angled it like this, you could do this, that, and the other. I think that another one that he would show them that I'm not even sure if they've comprehended yet would be taking the flat of your blade and hitting somebody with it to knock them unconscious. Like, so that's the sort of explanation of like, you will be fighting Hork-Bajir potentially. Here's how to knock them unconscious.
I do feel like just to sort of like it, a lot of what y'all would be teaching would be punches and stabs, and there'd be a lot more like slicing and whatnot taught from the Andalite. Like, y'all would of course tell every Hork-Bajir about his Macho Man Randy Savage elbow drop from the top rope. But yeah, that's what it'd be a lot of like straight on puncturing stuff.
Take the high ground. Jump down.
Yup.
Mm-hmm.
Hork-Bajir heavy.
Yeah,
heavy make hurt more.
Hit by Hork-Bajir, not have good day.
Yeah, then the Andalite comes in and is like, with the more slashing techniques. And stuff that's not gonna get you stuck in your
enemy. That's what I was imagining. It's like they're coming down and they're doing like Hork Bajir heavy, blah blah blah, and you know, that's when Smeelian will come in with like, yes, but you can be just as deadly with quick cuts, and like kind of show them like, you know, on a tree, like the very quick, like in out kind of, you know, slicing bark off kind of a thing.
And the other thing that y'all is doing is like what y'all thinks is very helpful. I know you not know what kind of creature, but this creature smart. You listen to this creature.
This one. And he points to Sinilian.
Yes.
Smart.
Knows, yes. Knows much. We learn.
Bolt actually takes on to the quick cuts that Sinilian is teaching. He seems to like that kind, but Rock, heavy Hork Bajir. Mm-hmm.
Then we have to keep pulling Rock out of stuff. The ground.
Yeah. He's then broke through stumps.
Yeah.
So I think each would go to where they would be harvesting and planting stuff, and probably either if they didn't know how to make healing salves, like teach them how to do that, or just kind of be like, hey, you know, we need to stock up, we need to make sure we have more of this ready. And then also the same thing along the lines with the buka buka powder and making that.
Yeah, Yum Yum is like, ooh, I try.
No, only in emergency.
Yes, yes, I might have emergency, never
not
know.
Not emergency. We'll know when emergency.
Okay.
Not now.
Oh no, it's emergency.
No, you lie. No. Mm.
I have vine.
May have some vine and red bark. Small.
Yeah. He pulls a vine off a tree and starts eating it.
But yeah, just making sure that anybody who's not actively learning to fight, or, you know, the little ones and everything, like, making sure that they have supplies stocked and ready.
And Bronx there with you, kind of sniffing out different ingredients that you need and kind of showing you where they are.
Best boy.
The Chidoo's fucking off. They cannot be bothered.
That's okay.
Kefa's gonna go up to the chieftain and say, you have seer?
Oh, different Hork Bajir. We have no seer here.
Mm.
I have met seer from far, great tree. Many star and moon ago.
Hmm. Which great tree?
He points in a direction. It's north. Far. Towards edge of forest.
Hmm. We need make... make hard for strangers to get here.
Oh. Only way here is climb tree.
Hmm. They climb.
Ah. What we do?
Make wall?
Can help. Bark team help. He just says, Garfnash! And up higher into the trees. And stocky Hork Bajir start to make their way down.
Sweet. Yeah, Kefa's just gonna guide them over to, like, where the tree connects on the settlement side. And start trying to help them figure out how to build this wall.
They have some techniques in all Hork Bajir kind of grow up learning it, how to strip the bark and even use some of their blades to cut the trees down and kind of split them how they need to. It does take some work, but it'll probably take you the rest of this day, but you can get like some walls started to where they block off definitely the sides and like the main where it connects to the second plateau, and then a little ways to the sides of it as well. If you want to get it like kind of around this whole crevice, it'll probably take the whole next day as well.
I mean, she can leave them to do that, but I think that she's going to go off to start like scanning various things around.
Is there anything in particular you're looking for, or you're just like kind of collecting information?
Just collecting information for now.
A lot of the trees you already kind of know about just being a Hort-Bajir. There's nothing, maybe just a few different things, but it's like the difference between oak and a birch. I don't know.
What are those differences, Austin?
Color of the bark, taste.
All right. Well, you're not wrong. Okay.
A feel. And age.
Mouthfeel. And age. Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to say like around here, as of right now, the stuff that you scan is, there's nothing, you know, that stands out too much.
Okay, cool. Yeah, they don't have anything special different.
Right.
Cool. Okay.
Give me a technology row, which is Arcana. Did I say it right? All right.
Yeah.
Scanner's still working.
Cool.
I think Alira just is still so curious about Father Deep, and she's like obsessing about it a little bit, and she's thinking about like everything that Sinilian told her about, like the staticky sort of thing and like the deep breathing monster, and she's definitely torn between wanting to go down there and wanting to like not risk her life and stay with the people that need her, but I think she's gonna try and explore down there herself, fly down there as a Kafit bird.
Are you letting anybody know? Is this gonna be something you actively keep from them?
She will tell Sinilian, and yeah, she's gonna go up to him and hand him the shredder, and say, I will be back in 20 minutes, and then I will leave again and be back in another 20 minutes. I will just keep checking in and letting you know that I'm safe. And if I don't come back in the time that I specify,
I will come after you.
You need to stay here.
We will see.
Will we? She smacks him with the flat of her tail blade. I'll be careful, so we don't have to worry about this.
Good.
And then she'll morph and fly down there.
You shoot down through the mist, down towards the stalagmites, and through them, and you get that same feeling that Sinilian described about it being uninviting. It does not feel like your body's telling you you don't want to be here. This mist is just not pleasant to you. But yeah, you keep moving. You notice sounds coming from the sides, the cliff faces, and as you shoot past, you hear them scurry more as you're going past, but they don't move closer towards you or anything like that. You kind of startle them, it seems like, to end up moving.
Okay. I am specifically looking for the staticky thing that Sinilian described, and I'm specifically looking for that big breathing thing, whatever comes into my peripheral first.
Are you going below the mist at all?
Yes.
As you pass up those first sounds that you hear and keep moving deeper and deeper, you drop below the mist. As you come out of the mist, you did not see this stalagmite shooting up, and you bank right as you come out of the mist, right before you see the stalagmite, you bank right and you still roll end over end and land on the ground, but you don't take any damage.
Okay, cool. I get back in the air, I guess.
As you kind of like stand back up and you go to spread your four wings, you hear the deep breathing noise, and then you see a figure probably 30 feet away from you, lying on the ground, breathing heavy as it sleeps. Is like a rough grayish skin color. It has two massive arms that end in three claws underneath its head that it's laying its head on them. Its head has these like an insectoid top side, like the top of its head, but it stretches out into a more of like a dog mouth, kind of like a what are those called? Maul, muzzle, muff. What is it called? Snout.
Not the third one.
Snout.
Snoot.
Snoot. And inside are these teeth, these razor sharp, probably 6-inch long teeth, and then four tusks shoot out from its upper like lip, and then right underneath where its eyes are. Its body is long and slender, and its legs bend back. They actually bend back, not like a wolf's bend back. They actually bend back, and the ankles do like the wolves, so they have those at the end of their legs. And then two out of their knees, two huge spikes that go to the ground. I think that probably over time, the time that you've spent with Kefa, y'all, and each, they probably told you about the Jubba Jubba monsters, and this is what that is.
Oh, neat. How loud is it when I morph and demorph? Like, in general.
I mean, it's like, if you're sitting at, like, out somewhere in public and somebody sits right next to you and plays their phone all the way loud, that's what how loud it is.
Okay. I'm going to move away from it to like a reasonable distance, and then I'm going to slowly start demorphing, keeping my eye on it to make sure it doesn't have really good hearing and can hear me, because if it does, I'm gonna morph back and bail.
As you back up, roll me a stealth check.
This is where it all goes wrong. It's where it's going to kill me, because I'm that bitch.
Oh, or not.
You start to back up, and this thing keeps heavily breathing and doesn't move.
Okie dokie.
You can get back there and start morphing, like kind of get away from it, or demorphing.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I'm going to get a certain distance away and then start demorphing.
It works.
Hooray! And then I'm going to walk up as quietly as I can and try to record it.
Okay, yeah, give me another stealth check.
This is not going to be good. Okay. Oh, thank God.
You creep up, and you're probably a foot away from this Jubba Jubba monster, and it is still sound asleep.
I'm going to touch it as gently and as least amount as I can and try to acquire it. Or record it.
This is the last stealth check you have to make.
How does inspiration work? Do I have to declare that before?
You just tell me you're using it and you can use it.
And that gives me advantage?
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to use it.
Okay.
Oh, thank God.
Your hand connects. You feel the rough texture of the Jubba Jubba monster skin. And then you feel that tingle in your fingers as the Jubba Jubba monster goes even slacker than it already is. And yeah, you have the Jubba Jubba monster.
Fuck yeah. All right. Got what I came for him out of there.
Yeah, you slowly back up and get a fair distance away. Roll another perception check.
I thought you were going to say roll another stealth check. And I was like, Austin, you promised me.
You hear the movement up higher on the cliff walls.
Morph back to Kefit. Get the fuck out.
Take off back towards where you came from and start to climb up. You enter into the mist. Give me one more perception check.
Okay, 13 plus 2, 15.
As soon as you break the mist and get back up into it, you hear a faint.
Oh, I'm going to get that.
It's coming back down from below you.
Yeah, I want to fly back down and get that.
Yeah, you can hear the same thing that Sinilian did. You go to this rock and you're kind of flying above it and you just hear the sounds, but you don't see anything.
If there's nothing around, I might try and land.
Yeah, with your perception check, you look around, you don't see anything.
Okay, I'll go land down there.
As you land and get closer to this, you get closer to this rock behind it. It's covered from the top, but you can kind of see that the rock is pushed away from the side of the cliff face. And behind it, there seems to be this spark coming. And as you kind of peek around, you see this small yellow crystal embedded into this like socket in this wall. And it's just sparking. The crystal looks like it is askew from the socket.
Indiana Jones! I mean, it looks like it needs to fit into a thingy?
Yeah, yes.
Into the socket. Okay, cool. I'll try and move it with my little bird claws. Or beak.
Yeah, it's easy enough for you to get your little beak in there and push the crystal back into the socket. And when you do, the it sparks one more time and then it stops. And like the background of the socket glows like a soft yellow. Give me an Arcana check, a technology check. Yeah, you can tell that this feels like some kind of power source. You don't know what it's powering or where you can't figure out how it connects just by based on what you're looking at, but this is not natural.
It's unnatural. And it's like, it's alien? Like,
the backing is illuminated, but it is like a flat surface. It's built inside the rock face. So it's like rock all around, then like a flat surface with a crystal in the middle that illuminates a soft yellow.
Okay, but there's no like sign of a door or anything?
Nope.
Okay. And I can't remove the crystal from the...
Do you want to take the crystal out with your beak?
Yeah, I kind of do.
You pull it out and there's a spark, and that flat surface that was illuminated yellow is not illuminated anymore.
Okay. I'm going to take it with me back to camp.
Yeah. You got to book it back up through this mist and back to the camp because you're almost at your 20 minutes.
Yeah, as soon as I get within range of thought speak, I'm going to be like, Sinilian, I'm fine. I'm sorry, I'm late. Late starters.
It wasn't like I was going to forward anything after you.
Victory! You guys did the montage.
Y'all walks up and just says, Y'all is here to Colin. Colin.
And then y'all takes his shirt off.
So, Chief Brower, if he need any of you, he can call on you.
That's Cap. I was trying to...
Yeah, I was about to say, it's hard. It's hard.
It is.
It sounds good in your head, and then you try to do it, and you just lose it.
Fucking failed, man.
Yeah.
All right, Hort Vizier Village, walls up, friends gathered.
I want to show the crystal to Sinilian and probably the chief and Kefa and everybody and just be like, does anyone know what this is?
The chieftain looks confused at it. No, never see. Is it, can you eat it?
I wouldn't recommend it, generally. Let's go with no.
And he goes back to help him build a wall. Like, he's still there, but he's like looking over his shoulder into the conversation.
Do we know what it is?
None of you have ever seen this, anything like this.
Cool. Okie dokie. I'll put it in my bag for safekeeping.
How many fighters have we trained up?
The whole BART team, which is probably, we'll say 15 Hork-Bajirs, are all trained up. The three boys have been in the training the whole time, except Yum-Yum. Yum-Yum has been with each, so I guess the two boys in.
So about 20?
Yeah, and then there's some like other Hork-Bajir that have joined.
Okay, so, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And we feel like they're reasonably trained up, like we're ready for whatever it is.
Yeah,
okay.
You of course got your ones that have been doing better than the others, but yeah, I would say all together you probably have around 40 that can fight off of a day's training.
Okay, then y'all is going to go up to Sinillion and be like, okay, we teach, you lead now, and then just walk to go to join the ranks of the fighting people.
I lead now?
Yes, you in charge. I go fight.
I will also fight with you.
Yes, but you also tell what to.
Oh, all right. Let's do this, I guess.
In a show of solidarity, he's going to turn around to the rest of the Hork-Bajir and just yell, I guess! And then jump in line and make sure that everybody knows that we're following Sinillion now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing they're going towards where you guys are building the wall.
Speaking of that wall, Kefa, do you have anything else you wanted to do with the wall, with the scanning or anything?
I don't think so. Maybe, like, take a bit and look at the least defensible part of the wall, like the part that we think might come down first, and try to figure out a way to, like, if not shore it up, then station people or spiky things there to sort of direct people away from it.
Give me either a survival or do you have anything else that you think it might be? Intelligence, maybe? For, like, strategy?
Yeah. Yeah, let's go with intelligence.
Yeah. So you know that, like, they've, like, you've already seen that pinch point of the tree bridge is where the Ged are going to have to come, especially since you've built this wall. The wall extends out probably 50 feet both ways. So, like, a 100-foot wall, pretty much, that will keep definitely people from getting across the bridge. Like, they're going to have to break the wall down to get through the village to get in that way. Hork-Bajir may be able to spread far and wide and get around the walls and jump over the trees. But with the defense of the Hork-Bajir that have been trained, that should help that. And you can kind of point out those spots and shore them up. And that's going to help you guys in your fight. Each, is there anything you want to do?
I don't think so specifically. I mean, each is definitely not fighter. Maybe trying to kind of, like, pull anybody who has, like, their homes or their nests around the perimeter, like, kind of try and bring them in so we're a little bit more centered, not near any of the edges and stuff like that. And, yeah, I don't know. Extra, like, working with the family groups to extra protect the little ones and that.
Yum Yum helps you with that, and he kind of talks to the younger ones and he says, I've been out there, I saw the battle, I protect you all.
So good, Yum Yum, so good.
But Rock and Bolt have joined the fighters, and as the night passes, is there anything you all want to do? Because you can you still have till tomorrow. So if you guys want to do anything at night, now's the time.
I'll only give you one more thing that I think Sinillion will do. And that's when they get to the wall, assuming that this was the place of the sort of start of the battle, the last stand. It's going to be determining layers of striations in the forest to protect, like who's going to be covering up high, who's going to be working down at the bottleneck, and who's going to be reinforcing and protecting the wall from being taken down.
You have people covering the things that you said. Where are you all going to be?
I think where Snillion will place himself, at least. I think y'all, he'll let go kind of where he feels most comfortable, but I think Snillion will be on the ground because that's where he's going to be most comfortable, and working in that bottleneck area to help take out the Geds, see what's coming, call shots.
Wherever y'all feels like the front of the battle is going to be is where he's going to be.
That'll definitely be on this tree bridge.
Yeah. Then that's where y'all will be out in front.
I would say each is going to be, will be like second wave back. The goal being, if people were getting hurt, pulling them back in, getting them back in, healing them, patching them up, and kind of rotating that through being that second line of defense.
Elira?
I think she wants to get up high somewhere, or somewhere where she can get a good vantage point and just kind of keep her options open. I think up in the trees, if possible, to do like surprise attack.
Surprise attack!
Kepha.
Kepha is going to be high up in the trees, so to where she can sort of see everything, or at least as much as possible. And close enough to one of the Andalites that she can shout at them.
You see Hort-Bajir lining these walls you've made, everybody kind of watching, waiting as the night grows darker and darker. As the light of Mother Sky first shines over Father Deep, you all hear the sound of creatures moving in the distance a lot, and they're getting closer. I scrambled backwards as the beast crashed down in front of me. My clawed foot hit a rock jutting up from the ground, sending me toppling over. I clutched the crystal as I began pushing myself away from the now recovering monster. It stood back up on its four legs and snarled as its white eyes stared at me. It leapt towards me and I rolled to the side, its claws cracking the ground as it landed right where I had been. I jumped back to my feet and ran towards the chasm's walls. I leapt and managed to grab one of the above ledges. Before I could pull myself up, I felt the beast smash into the wall beneath me, and I lost my grip. I fell onto the beast's back, and it began to buck and flail, trying to shake me off. I dug my knee and wrist blades into the creature's flesh to hold on. It wailed in pain. It then bucked right into a wall, and my head slammed into the rock beside us. This caused me to lose my focus, and I fell from the beast to the ground. I tried to push myself up, but I was dazed. I did manage to get to my knees.
"Here he come,"
warned Pick, but it was too late. The beast slammed me up against the wall. He had me. The drool dripped from its mouth, and he eased his head back, preparing for the strike. I felt my tail twitch, and suddenly, the beast's eyes widened, and it let out a short gasp. It staggered back, and I could see that my tail blade was sunk deep into its side. On wobbly legs, it swayed back and forth and then fell to the ground. I fell forward onto a knee, my heart racing. That's when I heard more growls from above. I looked up, and on the ledges were more of the beasts. At least four sets of glowing eyes watched me. I dug my clawed feet into the rocky dirt and pushed myself forward, fleeing from the beasts. They followed from their ledges above, bounding from one level to another, leaping over the gaps with ease, all the while watching me. One hopped down two ledges and I just managed to duck under it as it sprung towards me.
It crashed into the opposite wall of the chasm and shook its head, pushed itself back up, and then continued to chase.
Simtaf must leaving farther deep,
Pick said, stating the obvious. I am aware, you fool. I'm trying to keep us alive. I shot back. One of the creatures leapt from a ledge to a stalagmite and then to the ground as the other on my level caught up to it. Now, two chased me from above and two were right on me. One of them lunged, but I managed to jump and grab the top of a rock jutting up just in time to avoid it, sending the beast skittering as it tried to stop. As I pulled myself to the top, the second beast sunk its teeth into the end of my tail, and I fell, crashing onto a log that must have fallen from the forest above. I gripped my claws into the ground and tried to pull myself away, but the beast lashed his head back and forth with my tail still in its maw and dragged me back. It pulled me as I desperately tried to reach out for anything, something, to hold on to with one claw. The other gripped the crystal tight. When I knew this was in vain, I whipped my long neck around to see the beast. I turned my body over so I was on my back and coiled my leg up. With all of the power that I had in my long legs, I kicked my clawed foot towards the beast's face and dug them into it. It let out a yelp of pain, released my tail, and repelled back. It rubbed its eyes with its front legs. I turned and saw three other beasts surrounding me now, stalking. I stood back up and backed away slowly, my wrist and elbow blade sticking out in front of me to provide defense. I remember how Pick had fought us and how he used an irritating noise he could make by raking the horns on his head. It was a sound he had learned that hurt when creatures heard it. I found out after infesting and searching around that it hits a certain frequency when done correctly that will rupture a gland found just inside the ear of most creatures. I reached up with the clenched claw hand and used my wrist blades to rake the horns on my head, and the sound echoed through the chasm. The beast's head shook in pain and they began to claw at their ears for a moment. I had my chance to break free. I turned and ran. I saw an opening and I squeezed into it, my back and chest both touching the sides of the opening. I shimmied in, and just as I pulled my tail in, one of the beast's claws slammed down outside of the opening. I watched it as it paced back and forth, watching me. I was compacted into this small space. Deeper into the cavern, I saw a glow. There was a light coming from inside the walls. I turned to give one last look towards the beasts, and I watched as a massive claw scooped it up, off the ground, out of nowhere. I heard the yelps and saw the creature's blood drop down, and then a new, gnarled, toothy maw filled the opening, empty black eyes behind it.
Jabba Jabba,
Pick said as it bellowed out a roar towards me. I quickly resumed my sidestepping into the tunnel, making my way towards the light. After contorting my body through the tight cavern and hitting different limbs on jutting rocks, I finally made it to where the light was coming from. This break in the wall emptied out into a hallway. The hallway was lit with the glow of light strips every 30 feet or so. This was definitely not natural, and nothing Pick had ever seen before either. I began to walk and explore the halls, my claws clacking and echoing through as I stepped. I came to a room filled with devices I did not expect on the Hort-Bajir planet. There were computers and scanners and tools for building and repairing. There were medical devices and test tubes and all manner of things that I recognized. They weren't exactly the same as the devices that I had seen. They were similar enough that I could see that they were used for the same purposes. None of the computers were on. I looked around the room, investigating the devices, and found a socket similar to the one that I had found the crystal in. I carefully inserted the crystal I had into the socket, and a glow began to emit from it. All the computers began to brim with light and hum to life. The room I was in illuminated, and I could see that it looked like a laboratory. The Andalites used these rooms to invent things and heal each other and learn things about the world. It intrigued me to find one in the depths of this planet, where the beings could barely communicate with each other. It was astounding. There were spare machine parts in a chest near the wall. I could use these to make the Kondrona generator for myself if the right parts are here, I thought. I began to look through the parts to see what was needed, and I heard a rustling behind me. I turned and saw a quadruped avian creature freeze in my sights. It then skittered towards the door, but I jumped and cleared a table to cut it off. I pressed my forearm blade to its throat, and I was about to end it before it could end me. And it said, "No, please." I stopped suddenly and looked into its eyes. This beast had spoke.
"Monsters of Father Deep, no speaking,"
Pick said. I pushed his consciousness down.
"You speak,"
I said to it. "Please, don't kill me," it said again. I lowered my arm and took a step back, still keeping myself in between the new creature and the exit.
"What are you?"
I asked it.
"I have not come across any other species that can speak besides a Hork-Bajir on this planet."
"Yerks are not the only ones who wish to live in secret," it responded.
This creature knew I was a Yerk, and it knew what a Yerk was.
"I am an Arn," it continued. "We are the real inhabitants of this planet. The Hork-Bajir are our creations."
"How do you know of the Yerks?"
I said, lifting my blade back up. The creature took a few steps back and raised short arm claws that came out of the front of its chest. "The Arn monitor this planet. We know what goes on. We have seen your ships. I saw the takeover you and your comrades have begun. I know about your pools."
"How?"
"The Chadu." With his claws, he eased over to one of the computer monitors and brought up a screen. It was from the point of view of a Chadu. It looked over the Yerk pool Pick and Ori had carved out for us cycles ago. "We have outfitted many Chadu with optical relays."
"You can do that?"
I asked, with the proof already in front of me. "The Arn are masters of biological engineering. We made most of the species on this planet. It all started when an asteroid hit our planet and caused everything to be wiped out." I zoned out of this Arn's explanation of how his people came to be. I was more interested in what he could do for me. If he could create beings and alter others, I could only imagine what he was capable of. I could invest him and gain his knowledge. However, he did not look as well suited for combat as my Hork-Bajir host. He must have seen me eyeing him up and down because he stopped his rant.
"You will not be able to infest me," he said. "I have installed a gland at the end of my ear canal that is toxic to you Yerks. If you try to enter, it will rupture and kill us both."
"Then you will help me and I will keep you around. I will keep my people from making you a slave. Working for me will be better than working for them, I assure you."
I then began to look around the lab again.
"I will do this of my own free will," I responded. "There's no need to threaten me. I can be a powerful ally to you."
"We will see," I said without turning back to him. I searched through the spare parts and put some on the table. Over the next few days, I hinged all my bets on getting this portable generator working. I was right about the crystal being an energy source, and it did have the capacity I needed to power the generator. The Arn, whose name was Shinokwal, showed me how to scale down the other pieces as well. There were errors in the construction, but they were all mine. Shinokwal knew what he was doing. He had not lied about his people. It was time for me to feed. There was no holding tank I could put Pick in while I fed. But to my surprise, Shinokwal had made a modification to the generator.
"I have added an optical emitter that will let the Kendrona rays be absorbed through your host's eyes. You must sit with it for a few hours, but you do not need to exit your host to use it."
"This is a very acceptable upgrade, Shin," I told him. "If it works, you will work with me on far greater things for the Empire than this. You will be a valuable ally."
Shinokwal nodded his head.
"This bad,"
Pick said. "Bad for you," I answered. I held the generator up to my eyes and began my feeding. I had learned over the past few days not to question Shinokwal's work. But even still, I was surprised that this worked. I was absorbing what I needed while inside my host. This took away one of my people's only weaknesses. This would catapult us light years forward into our conquest. I would be a Visser after this. I would rise even higher than Actor 1154. After my feeding, I set back out through another entrance. Shinokwal showed me. None of the beasts bothered me, and I was able to climb back up into the forest. I was brachiating through the trees back towards the pool.
Akdor not liking this?
Pig said to me, calmly and flat. This Hork-Bajir was sure of himself, despite his true intelligence level. Akdor will benefit from this too. All Yerks will.
Akdor want power for Akdor. Akdor not like Simtaf stronger.
Even though this creature didn't know why, he was right. Akdor would look at this as a sign of overthrowing him, which I hadn't considered initially. I should overthrow him now. I was smarter. I had the better host with more abilities. He wouldn't stand a chance against me. However, the invasion was just beginning here, and many Yerks were loyal to Akdor because he got us off the planet. I would take my rightful place when the time presented itself, but not now. Not yet. I would use this new device to my advantage and explore the planet, and Shinoqual would help. I returned to my pool mates and bided my time. Many rotations and cycles passed, and we continued taking most of the tribes in the Great Trees to the north. There were stragglers that we missed, but most Hork-Bajir were our hosts now. Then Syra was sent. We had not seen an Andalite since the raid on their camp all that time ago. Syra had given us the greater universe, but he now posed a threat if he knew about it. His family was with him, and another prince, Prince Jaheim, who kept his distance from Syra and his family. Akdor had intercepted a message Syra sent to the fleet now that we were much more organized, and the Empire sent us reinforcements, more ships. He decided to destroy him. He took the ship himself, and from what I heard back, he was successful in his mission, finally taking the forceful approach he had always wanted. He destroyed Syra and his scoop and the closest great tree. He only infested the Hork-Bajir that managed to elude the blasts. There were reports of Andalites working with the Hork-Bajir, but that could not last long. The arrogant Andalites would not be able to work with the dim-witted Hork-Bajir for long. But I had infiltrated a great tree tribe near the one that had been destroyed, and I thought that might be where they were headed next. I was right. I waited there and lived as a Hork-Bajir with them for a while. And sure enough, the Andalites showed up.